I'm Mike.
And I'm Sue.
And this is Life, Death and Sex.
With Mike and Sue. And welcome to the show which looks at life, death and sex.
Although not that much at death.
And quite a lot at sex. But first, this week's weather wisdom sent in by a Mrs. Jumbleson of Piddlehigh Farm, Upper Burnstead in Somerset. She says,
my granddad taught me this old riddle, told by farmers from generation to generation back to time immemorial. Here's a riddle me ree of sun and rain and snow, and sleet and fog and sun and cloud, and when the wind doth blow. Pray tell me quick and tell me clever, who's generating electricity, whatever the weather?
Yes, well, thank you for that quaint piece of old rural England, Mrs. Fraud.
That is probably the stupidest slogan in modern advertising, isn't it? Just in case you were thinking that the average million megawatt gas turbine power station has to be switched off if it rains.
Yes.
So I mean, no one else has jumped to get on that bandwagon, have they? I noticed Telecom aren't saying BT, letting you use the phone even if it's windy.
Yes. Well, okay, Mike, don't worry about it. Now, tonight, the joys and sorrows of party entertaining and therapy. How useful is it?
McVitie's, making lots of biscuits, even if it is nice and sunny and we'd rather be outside.
Yes. But first, do you have trouble reading a bus timetable? Can't fill in the simplest form? In short, are you one of the estimated 2 million adults in Britain who is functionally illiterate or innumerate?
If so, then you should have tried harder at school.
Why?
Well, come on, let's face it. I mean, unless you're actually dyslexic or genuinely backward or something, then there's no excuse. I mean, it's not hard to learn to read, really, is it? I mean, my view is that anyone of normal mental ability who can't read is just plain old-fashioned lady. Lazy, sorry.
But you don't have to agree. Do you think more funds should go to helping illiteracy and innumeracy? If so, call us on 0171-499-5655.
If you can find someone to dial for you.
Also, we'll be giving the answer to last week's competition. You remember the question was, which of these people has never played for England? Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, or Dame Kiri Takanawa? The answer, of course, was C, and over 348,000 of you got it right. Mainly because, like all these multiple-choice phone-in competitions, the question was fatuously simple, and the only point of it is for us to make a packet out of your phone calls. Calls are, of course, only charged at 10p a minute.
Meaning we only grossed about 34 grand. Even after Telecom got their extortionate wedge, that's still a nice little earner. Today we'll also be covering the subject of...
Actually, the incredible thing was that one of you got it wrong.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. One person phoned in and got it wrong. Incredible.
So, our thanks to a Mr. J. Hill of West London.
Still to come tonight, a special preview of the latest and newest docu-soap hit and the world of therapy. But first tonight, parties. Yes, parties. Love them or hate them, it's difficult to avoid them.
Parties are part of life, literally, from the christening to the wake. For most of us, our first experience of them is as a child attending birthday parties. Psychologists say that our experiences here can set our socializing pattern for the rest of our life.
Right, okay, I've got the hummus, the tahini, breadsticks, celery, good, chardonnay in the fridge, beer in the bin, got some fito for anyone who wants red.
Sophie, problem.
Problem?
It's Tom.
Tom?
Yes, you know, property consultant lives in West Hampstead, brought the chili and stuff.
Oh, yes. What's up?
He's not happy about the pass the parcel.
Oh, no.
No, he says he won and it's not fair. He thinks Andrew tore off two layers at once.
But he already won the musical chairs.
Well, he's in a terrible state. And another thing, you know Alan from Tooting, works at the Civil Aviation Authority. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Denise, educational psychologist with that lovely flat in Barnes.
Yes, yes.
Well, you'll never guess what, but I saw them... Kissing!
Kissing! Oh, I'm telling on them!
Yeah,
I
me too. Yeah, anyway, another glass of red and a Miller Lite, please, for Tom.
Coming up.
In former times, of course, parties were very formal occasions, and guests were introduced by a caller as they arrived for a social gathering. And there are some traditionalists who believe that this tradition should be revived, especially for teenagers.
Mr. Andrew Patton and Miss Lavinia Leach. Mr. Jonathan Tedder and some girl from the fourth year he's fancied for ages. Miss Angeline Lincoln and Mr. Sampson, the cradle-snatching geography teacher. A strange man in an expensive jacket selling drugs. Mr. and Mrs. Potter, parents of the host, home unexpectedly early.
When you're giving a party, of course, one of the nightmares is the food. We're very lucky today to have with us Lucy Brewer, party caterer extraordinaire, who's going to give us some handy tips on delicious party nibbles to make your party just that little bit special. Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Sue.
Now, you've brought a whole range of tasty-looking treats here, so tell us what a few of them are.
Well, here we have a homemade brioche with serrano ham and asparagus. These are small whole scallops, lightly poached in a spring vegetable juice, and then served in their shells on a bed of spinach and nutmeg.
Have you got any crisps?
This is a nice variation on the old sausages on sticks.
That sounds more like it.
I've used Spanish chorizo.
Oh, God.
Wrapped in an anchovy and dipped in caraway seeds.
Oh, God.
And these little things are called devils on horseback.
Wait for it.
They're made of prunes.
Ugh.
Wrapped in bacon and then baked in a...
Have you got any twiglets?
I'm sorry?
Small flour and water sticks lightly dipped in Marmite.
Oh, Mike.
I mean, come on. I mean, nobody really eats this sort of stuff, do they? It all stays on the plates while everyone wolfs down the crisps and the twiglets.
Well, that depends on what sort of friends you've got. Anyway, here we have mushroom vol-au-vent.
No, what do you mean, what sort of friends I've got?
These are delicious, Lucy.
Thank you very much, Sue. Yes, I've used fresh wild mushrooms, but dried
will do. Excuse me, what are you saying about my friends?
Nothing. Now, these are prawns rolled in sea salt, and they've got
that I've never sort of...
What? Yeah. It's just that he never goes to parties with this sort of food. That's what he's saying.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that, Mike. Nothing at all.
Oh, yes, there is. I mean, you're not admitting it out loud, but there is. You think me and my friends are lazy, good-for-nothing slobs, don't you? Just laddish junk food stuffing layabouts. Just because our idea of party eating isn't a raw snail wriggling in a pastry shell with a pistachio nut rammed up its ass. Bottom.
So what you're saying, Mike, is that you're too feeble to eat anything different.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, that's just so brave. To admit that, I mean, I wish I was that brave. I mean, here I am, stuffing away these horrible things and disgusting foreign muck, and all because I can't face the social pressure of admitting I don't like it.
Is it you don't like
it? It's all absolutely disgusting. I mean, anchovies, well, just like great huge trails of snot you've just sneezed up and eaten again. No, I'm with you, Mike. Every time I'm confronted with this sort of poncy nosh, I really wish I could just have a nice big bag of frazzles.
Or twiglets.
Lovely.
So... neither of you like my food.
Nobody likes your food.
How dare you?
You know, Mike, I'm never going to pretend again. Never again will I allow media pressure to force me to eat things I don't like the look of.
The pair of you are appalling. I am going.
Good. And take your horrible snacks with you before we both puke.
Lucy Brewer there with her suggestions for deliciously different party catering.
Philistines.
You're with Mike and Sue, and this week we're doing a phone poll, whatever the weather. Let's see how we're getting on.
That's right. Now, the subject is illiteracy. If you think more resources should be targeted at the illiterate, phone us now.
If you haven't been cut off because you couldn't read your bill.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I know it's not PC or whatever, but as I'm sure listeners appreciate, I speak as I find.
Many people don't fully appreciate the problems faced by adults attempting to overcome this stigma. If you learn to read late as a fully grown adult, then do you read the same books as if you learnt to read as a child?
Oh, hi. What are you up to?
I'm just buying my holiday reading.
Yeah. Not Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Oh, God. Haven't you read that yet?
No, I've been reading the new Pynchon. Last year, zipped through A Suitable Boy.
Oh, right. Yeah, amazing, yeah.
No.
I've got Beryl Bainbridge and a bit of Patricia Cornwell for light relief. Yeah, what about you, Tony?
I'm taking Mr. Happy.
Oh, that's amazing. amazing.
Yeah, yeah, Hargreaves' best, I think.
Well, I think Mr. Nosey is an extraordinary piece of work, I really do.
Is he the mauve one with the big nose?
Yes, that's it, yes. The thing is that in Mr. Nosey, the main character gets on everyone's nerve by being nosy very unpopular. Yeah. So they gang up, play a trick on him, and he ends up losing his nosiness and becoming popular again. Yeah. But the thing is...
Yeah, he still has the big nose.
At the end, he still has the big nose. Yeah. And yet he's not nosy.
No, he's lost his defining characteristic, and yet...
He still possesses the physical manifestation of that characteristic.
Yeah.
I mean, Hargreaves is sort of playing games with identity here, isn't he? Is Mr. Nosey nosy because of his nose?
Who knows?
Or is his nose merely an unfortunate physical feature which leads people to prejudge him?
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, in my mind, it invites a crypto-Dickensian critique of social mores.
Well, it must be so marvellous to be able to read all those for the first time.
Lovely.
And good for you. Good for you. Learning to read at your age.
Oh, no, I've been reading since I was 5. I just prefer these to all the crap you're reading.
Now, apparently on the line is a Mr. J. Hill of West London. Hello, Mr. Hill.
Hello, young man. Now, I find this sort of thing completely unacceptable, I'm sorry to say, but you implied earlier on your very good programme that I don't know anything about football, and that, of course, is completely untrue. I do know a great deal about football, and, in fact, I know everything there is to know, in fact, about... football.
I'm sorry. I do take that comment back.
Good. Well, I'm very pleased, young man. You see, it's only everything else in the world that I don't know anything about. You see, I don't know anything at all about anything except football, you see. Go on, you test me.
Well, I'm sure you're just being modest.
Well, no, and can I just say here that modesty isn't the issue. The issue really is me and my complete lack of knowledge about any aspect of human existence other than the beautiful game.
Jimmy, thank you, that's enough.
No, you see what I mean, though? You see, I only know, you see, about football. So go on, just test me.
All right. Who won the Battle of Hastings?
Battle of Hastings was Sir Stanley Rouse, 1954, in the 8th minute, I think. Wasn't
try another one out. What is the longest river in Africa?
River in Africa? What's the difficult... No, that's a trick question, is it? I think it's 4-3 to Arsenal, Guadalajara, Billy Bonds. Is that...
Jimmy, can I ask you a question?
Dear. Yes, of course, my love.
What colour are your wife's eyes?
Wife's eyes? Now, I know this.
Come on, Jimmy. What colour are your wife's eyes?
Claret with blue sleeves. Is that right? Red and white vertical stripes, are they? No, yellow away strip. Anyway, I know that. And
Well, thanks, caller. That's the last time we put our number in the Radio Times. Okay, it's time now for our regular debate.
Yes, in front of our invited audience, we're going to address an issue dear to their hearts. And I'm sure this has touched many of you listeners at home.
Today on Life, Death and Sex with Mike and Sue, we're going to talk about things.
And we're asking, have things gone too far?
Now, for this lady here, things did go too far. Judith Merriman, tell us about your experience.
Right, well, I was hanging up the washing Tuesday last, and I just thought, you know, what with one thing and another, that these days, things have gone too far.
Ah. So for things going too far, you point the finger of blame at one thing and another. Okay, this is obviously touching a nerve with lots of people in our audience. Gentleman in the second row.
Well, I think she's talking...
Can you just wait till the microphone comes to you, please?
I am an alcoholic, and I'm also a diabetic.
Yes, what's your point?
I haven't got a point.
Yes. woman over here in the red shirt.
I think generally I would agree that things have gone too far, right? But not in Sidcup. Because, right, my sister, right, she lives in Sidcup, but she's never mentioned anything about things going too far.
Well, obviously a lot of people here would disagree. Sir, yes, do you come from Sidcup?
I do.
Yes, and have things gone too far?
Things have gone far enough.
Oh, but not too far.
No, not too far or not far enough. Things are just right. I'm also diabetic.
Superintendent Montre, your boys are on the sharp end. Things. Too far or not far enough? Where do you stand?
Well, we're working with community leaders, getting into the community, talking with the community, and opening up dialogue with the community. have I said community enough?
Once more?
Community.
Next week on our big debate, we'll be asking, should you?
We want to hear from anyone who thinks you should.
Or if you think you should and actually have.
Or if you have but think you shouldn't.
Or if you shouldn't have but think you should.
Or if you have and should but don't think.
Now our next topic tonight, therapy.
You're listening to Life, Death and Sex with Mike and Sue.
The first step to therapy is admitting you need it. Otherwise, you're likely to end up being counseled by someone unqualified. For example, your own mother. Otherwise known as pull-yourself-together therapy. It's all the rage in, where else? The United States.
Latitude, Arkansas is a one-horse town like any other, but 3 years ago something happened here which was to put Platitude right on the map. Jeff Dodgley was a part-time raccoon wrangler and full-time drinker. Going nowhere fast, Jeff lost his job and could no longer afford even essentials like food, fuel, and his regular twice-weekly therapy sessions at $200 an hour. Desperate, he went instead to his own mother, and in just 10 minutes was completely cured of a 10-year depression.
I just listen to him, to his problems, his complaints, and I made my diagnosis.
And what was that?
I just told him he was big pain in the butt, who did nothing but moan, moan, moan. And why couldn't he be like that nice boy, Farla McGee? Now, there was a boy who'd made something of himself. I mean, why couldn't I have a son like him with his shiny new tractor? No.
Impressed, Jeff went away and wrote the book, which was to become a major bestseller across America. The groundbreaking self-help volume, Stop Your Whining and Get Off Your Fat Ass.
I was overweight, I had low self-esteem, I wasn't interested in anything.
Griselda Shackhinge.
I just didn't want to get up in the morning, and then a friend recommended PYTT, and I said, what's that? And she said, pull yourself together therapy. And she gave me this book, and it has just changed my life.
Griselda was a French fry pan shaker in her local drive-in burger joint. Now, she has a new job.
Yeah, that's right. I am now deputy to the chief of staff. U.S. and NATO Western Forces with special responsibility for nuclear policy. I think I got that right.
And you put this down entirely to the book.
That's right, yeah. Well, that and some Polaroids I have of Bill Clinton.
But not everybody was so impressed. Dr. Lavinia Blanket, herbal psychotherapeutical technician and author of the bestseller Herbal Paths to Healing Your Inner Child of Venus.
I was disgusted. I thought the book was dangerous, appalling, irresponsible.
Why?
Well, because he'd found an even easier way to make a pile of money than I had. I mean, I thought my book was bull, but this took the cookie. Why didn't I think of it?
Similar reactions came from Dr. Lancelot Moody, author of the bestseller Change Your Life and Find Love Through the Power of Seaweed. And Professor J.P. Bogus, author of the million-selling paperback Ancient Rainforest Gods and How They Can Help You Get More Sex. Hollywood flocked to Dodgley and his radical ideas. Even those normally most in favor of conventional therapy succumbed. Critics are already reporting that the new Woody Allen film is showing a radical new approach.
Hi. God, I feel nauseous. This is terrible. I don't know what to do.
Oh, God.
It's the situation with Elaine and Sam, isn't it?
What? No. There's a giant comet heading towards Earth, and it's swarming with aliens. No. Literally swarming. But they've reckoned without one thing. I tell you, me. Yeah, I'm going to get up there and kick their butts.
Oh, God, no. Aliens? That's kid stuff, Woody.
No,
this
not
is
at
sophisticated
all.
Adult drama.
But you should see them, the big bug aliens with lasers and big teeth and special effects where the spaceships go right past in 3D. It's tremendous. I love it.
Sure, but what about us upscale Manhattan urbanites with our midlife problems?
Yeah.
Try this. Has
Hasta la vista, babies. Yeah. Say, I need your clothes, your boots, and, hey, I'll take that German coffee grinder as well.
Wait, I'm morphing into a giant lizard with glasses.
But your movie's still set in New York, right?
Sure, but this time, I eat New York.
Therapy, of course, has only been around for a relatively short time in human history. Who knows what traumas could have been avoided if qualified counsellors had been available in earlier times. We've obtained this extraordinary recording.
Okay, let me just first say that I think the fact that the two of you are here, together, is a very healthy sign. So, Henry... Why don't you start?
Fie upon start, Sirrah! 'Tis an end on thy desire. I want a divorce.
Okay. Now, Anne, if I could bring you in at this point...
He cannot, he faith, for we are married and the Pope shall never consent.
Yes, well, that is a very valid point, Henry.
The Pope? That roomish poltroon, I fart in his face. I have defied him once. I divorced Catherine of Aragon for she looked like an horse. And if the Pope shall say me nay, I shall set up mine own church. Ah!
Set up your own church. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Anne, Henry seems to be threatening huge constitutional change.
A schism with Rome, which will redefine English society forever. Yes, yes, I know. It's all talk.
You defy me, woman!
Oh, what? Set up your own church. You couldn't set up your own bookshelves.
You shall go to the tower, and the executioner shall have your head in a basket.
Now, I'm sensing a certain amount of anger here.
Anger! Let the fury of the blood Tudor descend on and smite thee with the axe.
Oh, that's your answer to everything, isn't it? Porridge too hot, chop his head off. Comb your beard wrong, chop his head off. You need a sense of proportion, you do. Of course, it's easy for him. Just sits around all day playing that bloody lute.
Oh, I don't know. I should have stayed with Catherine.
She was hopeless in bed. You said so.
Aye. And thou wert a little rabbit of a girl.
Now, I'm sensing a healthy physical relationship here.
Thou little strumpet, little she-deer, strutting peahen.
Yes, no problems there, then. Now, perhaps we should move on, then, to the issue of emotional support.
Let us leave this dolt and hie us to the bedchamber. My codpiece, it bursteth.
Yes. Now, parental background.
You bore me, Sirrah.
Oh, wait for it.
Take him to the tower.
Oh, right. Well, same time next week.
Off with his head!
One interesting new departure in therapy is group therapy. Now, this, as its name suggests, is therapy for groups on the verge of splitting up. It was pioneered in the 60s by Dr. Ron Spengler, who now has a thriving business on both sides of the Atlantic, and Ron is here to explain to us the principles of his technique.
Thanks, Sue. It all started in the late 60s when I, along with many others, was shocked and upset when the Beatles split. I knew that if I could have been there, I could have done something about it.
Yeah, Paul and I have talked it over, and, we've decided to stay together for the sake of the royalties.
That's right. Royalties need both parents if they're going to grow up healthy and strong.
And I'm sure that we can work it out. Although I must warn you, one more word about this frog chorus idea, and I'm off.
You see, what I realized very early on is that pop bands tend to share a common raft of problems. One partner may be involved in another relationship, perhaps with jazz music or film scores, or very often the drummer, for example, will get very upset if the group begin to seek satisfaction elsewhere and feel humiliated by discovering that the others get a better performance from an electronic rhythm machine.
And does this syndrome have a name?
Yes, crap drummer syndrome. You'll have to excuse me, I have to leave now. I have a 2-hour session with Jerry Spice.
Ah, so you're at work on that one too.
Work? You said anything about work?
Oh, as promised earlier, a sneak preview of the latest new Fly on the Wall documentary. It's called Fly on the Wall, and it's about some flies. on a walk.
Yes. According to the producers, the series covers a year in the lives of the flies on the wall, and over the course of 12 months, we get to meet a whole series of fascinating and lovable characters. Sounds great, doesn't it, Mike?
Riveting isn't the word.
Yes. The producers say they hope it will be a big hit in the tradition of Airport, Hotel, Driving School, Pleasure Beach, Lakesiders, and 368 other series. I think, actually, we've got a clip coming up now, and the series is narrated by Bob Peck.
Early summer, and the flies are preparing to leave the wall and start the year's activities. The first to leave are Nora, the funny old battle axe with a strong regional accent, her long-suffering husband Fergus, and Nicky, the camp one who's amusingly articulate. Nora and Fergus, meanwhile, have flown out into the street in search of some fresh dog mess on which to land.
Land down there! Down there!
Where? What?
Down there, there, turn left!
What are you talking about?
Down there? Oh, you missed it now. Dirty Greek turn just down there by the keep left sign.
Why didn't you say so?
I did say so.
You were louder than I said. Keep your eye out, didn't I?
I kicked off 4,000 sodding eyes out and you missed it.
Nicky, meanwhile, is walking about on his piece of cheese.
What I normally do is walk around like this and then I stop and rub my front legs about like this. Apparently humans think we're spitting out enzymes or something, but the truth is, I just like rubbing my legs together.
Next week, Nicky gets caught in a jar of jam. Nora gets lost on the northern line, and Fergus has a... Oh, sorry.
On next week's show, we have some thought-provoking items. We'll be talking about euthanasia. The Bishop of Blandford will be putting the case against voluntary death, and Vanessa Feltz will be putting the case for.
Let's face it, Vanessa Feltz is the case for. We want to know what you think. Should you be allowed to drop off the perch whenever you fancy, or should you be forced to hang on in there, sustained helplessly in your terminal state by a chemical cocktail of powerful drugs, denied the chance to control your own destiny, hamstrung by a conspiracy of outmoded religious dogma and the arrogance of the medical establishment? But don't let me try and sway you.
And on a jollier note, we'll be talking about pants. The great Why Fronts the Jockeys debate. So that's euthanasia and pants. Right here on Life, Death and Sex.
With Mike and Sue. Oh, and one second, actually, just before we go, we do have a caller coming through. It's Mr. Hill from West London again.
Yes, hello again, my dear. Sorry to, but I've been replaying your question, and there's no doubt now, in my mind, vis-à-vis my wife's eyes, that blue is the colour. Football, of course, is a game. No.
That's fortunately all we have time for. I'm Mike.
And I'm Sue.
And this has been Life, Death and Sex.
With Mike and Sue.
Life, Death and Sex with Mike and Sue was written by Steve Punt from a format by Bill Dare. It starred Robert Duncan and Jan Ravens with Roger Blake, Alistair McGowan, Ronnie Ancona and Steve Punt. Music was by Mark Burton and the producer was Alid Evans.